Hi, I'm Alex. 欢迎收听硅谷幼儿小趣派。
Oh, yeah!
Hello, 大家好，这里是硅谷育儿少数派，我是 Lina。 最近怀着非常沉重的心情看完了 Netflix 上热播的一个英国犯罪类题材的迷你剧，叫做 Adolescence， 直译成中文就是青春期，当然也有一些中文翻译呢，把它翻成迷惑少年时。我不知道有多少在听节目的家长朋友也看过这部剧了。这部剧啊，一出来就打破了收视记录，并迅速引发了广泛的关于社交媒体、网络霸凌以及有毒的男子气概的这样话题的社会讨论。那么在今天节目的一开始，我想先跟大家分享一下自己对这部剧的解读和感受。当然不想被剧透的听众呢，可以选择跳过接下来的这一段内容。故事讲述了一个13岁的英国少年谋杀了同校的一位女生而被捕，当然他的家庭也由此蒙上了永远挥之不去的阴影。这样的青少年犯罪事件，相信是每一个家长的噩梦。而本剧呢，则透过一镜到底的叙述方式来体现出了这一事件背后复杂而深远的原因。除了社交媒体和网络霸凌对当今青少年成长的巨大侵害之外，长久以来在社会中存在的对传统男子气概的崇拜，也对现今男性青少年的心理发展造成了很多负面的影响。当然在剧中还体现了英国工薪阶层家庭所在的公立学校在面对手机与网络带来的校园文化冲击时的无能为力。当悲剧发生时，人们很容易把罪过先推到少年的父母身上。然而剧中对于这对普通却又充满爱意的父母的刻画真实又细腻，这也揭开了一个令人细思极恐的事实，那就是即便是有爱的父母或正常的家庭，在面对另一个他们看不见的难以企及的网络世界时，他们对孩子的了解程度及掌控程度也许比我们想象中的要低得多。作为一个家长，在观看的过程中，我最伤心的时刻就是看见学校里青少年们人人拿着手机的颓废的校园面貌。正如其中那位探访学校的警官说的，这里充斥着一股臭味。也许他说的并不仅仅是字面意义上的校园不干净所导致的臭味，而是隐喻了在这片本应充满了灿烂阳光的地方，却滋生出一股从内到外的腐烂的气味。网络霸凌无处不在，而这些行为当被披上了网络语言的外衣之后，就变得隐形而难以觉察。所有的成年人在事件的调查中都被这些陌生的在青少年世界里流行的网络暗号给震惊到了。也许在不知不觉中，青少年的世界已经离他们想象中的样子很远很远了。同时我最感到揪心的一个片段，也是那位犯罪的少年在与心理专家对话的过程中所展示出来的内在与表象的格格不入的一面。心理专家试图理解少年的世界，试图从少年的视角去解读他眼中的自己和他人，从而探寻他的杀人动机。然而即便是一位经验老道的心理专家，在最后少年心理破防对他发出歇斯底里的怒吼的时候，他还是被这少年的内心世界给深深地震撼到了。少年不停地追问心理专家，你喜欢我吗？这是一句多么多么令人心痛的发问。所有的一切，所有的罪恶，其实都来源于少年心底对于被外界认同、被喜爱的一种极度渴求。而在传统男子气概的文化影响下成长起来的他，在童年里也许从来没有获得过一样宝贵的东西，那就是同理心和包容感。这似乎也造就了他自身同理心的缺失。所以在整个等待审判的过程中，最让人不可思议的是， 这个对自己同学连捅七刀的少年却从来没有表现过忏悔和内疚。这个清秀的少年在父母的眼里依然是那个嘴上挂着巧克力酱的天真孩童，他对历史感兴趣，喜欢画画，对体育项目嗤之以鼻，也不擅长。然而在周围人的眼里，这样的男性是没有吸引力可言的，即便是他自己的父亲也在生活的不经意间展现出了对自己孩子缺乏男性阳刚之气的失望感。这种对自己男性魅力和自信心的缺失也使得少年成为了女性同学嘲笑和网络霸凌的目标。所以整部剧让我非常不解的是，即便是这样一个样貌、学识、家庭都不算糟糕的男生，可是在他的眼里自己却是丑陋的，而且他对此深信不疑，这让心理专家及每一个观众都不得不倒吸一口凉气。社交媒体、网络文化以及我们所在的社会所塑造出来的价值观，到底为青春期的孩子们构建了一个怎样扭曲而不堪的世界？而这个世界究竟离我们有多遥远？根据美国卫生与公共服务部的数据，13到17岁的青少年使用社交媒体的比例高达 95%， 将近三分之二的青少年表示他们每天都使用社交媒体。研究也显示，每天使用社交媒体超过三小时的儿童和青少年面临心理健康问题的风险是其他人的两倍。然而最新的调查显示，现在的青少年平均每天花在社交媒体上的时间是 3.5 个小时。当被问及社交媒体对外形和自身形象的影响时，46%的13到17岁的青少年则表示，社交媒体让他们对自己的身体和外形感到非常的不自信。说实在的，作为家长，当我看到这些数据的时候，我心底里面真的产生了一种深深的担忧。在之前的节目里，我也谈论过社交媒体影响下的焦虑的一代这个话题。在面对网络世界日益低龄化的今天，我们到底要如何可以通过行动来帮助减少其所带来的负面影响？好像一味的去抵制或者限制，自然是达不到我们期待的理想效果的。那么，世界卫生组织在最近出来的最新报告里就指出，青少年他需要的是养成一个更加健康的上网习惯，那么网络素养教育则应当被提上日程。于是在我的好奇心的驱使下，我也做了一些调研。那么我发现，在科技日益更新的时代之下，现在呢有一项新兴的教育课程也应运而生，它的名字叫做数字公民素质教育。这项教育课程它旨在帮助孩子们学会如何在网络世界中安全、理性、负责任的互动。那么今天这期节目呢，我将带大家具体的来了解一下这门课程，以及它将如何帮助家长和教育者们去塑造未来新一代的数字公民。数字公民素养教育英文名称为 Digital Citizenship， 是由硅谷的一家非盈利公民社会组织 Common Sense Media 于2010年推出的一套免费线上课程。 Common Sense Media 可能在很多美国的家长群里已经并不算陌生，因为我们会经常使用他们的一些在线资源来了解影视剧作品是否适合我们家孩子的年龄。当然 Common Sense Media 也一直在致力于其他的跟线上教育相关的内容和话题，就比如说这项数字公民素养教育在过去的十多年里不断的迭代升级，逐渐被全球众多的教育工作者和学校采纳与实践。2025年的最新版本的数字公民素养课程 现在已经上线了。那么这门课程的核心内容呢，主要有以下的五点。第一，它会教孩子如何管理自己的数字身份，避免未来因为不当的网络行为而影响学业或工作。第二，他们也将教会孩子如何识别虚假信息，培养他们的批判性思维，不被社交媒体上的谣言所误导。第三，他们将教会孩子如何应对网络霸凌，学会合理表达，避免伤害他人，也知道如何自我保护。第四，就是要教会孩子们如何平衡屏幕时间，避免沉迷网络，建立健康的网络使用习惯。第五，在 AI 的发展和趋势之下，要如何安全地使用人工智能，理解 AI 的优势和局限，避免信息滥用。数字公民素养不仅仅是一门网络安全课，而是一门涉及社交行为、道德观念、批判性思维的综合课程。目的呢，是让学生真正的理解如何在数字时代成为负责任的网络公民。那么接下来我们再来看一下美国的学校究竟是如何来上这门课的呢？在美国的一些公立和私立学校啊，他们都已经把数字公民素养课程纳入到日常的教学任务当中来了。比如加州的城县统一校区、亚特兰大的公立校区等等，他们从小学到高中，数字公民素养就已经成为了一个系统化的教育项目。例如在小学阶段，孩子们呢会先去学习基本的上网安全，比如如何创建安全密码，如何辨别友善和不友善的网络行为。在中学阶段呢，这个课程会涉及到社交媒体的使用，如何管理个人隐私，以及如何识别虚假新闻等等。在高中阶段呢，这个课程会重点讨论人工智能伦理、数字足迹对未来职业发展的影响，以及如何在网络世界中建立积极的个人品牌等等。一些学校呢，还会使用真实的案例，让学生分析网络世界中常见的问题，比如如何应对网络霸凌，如何判断新闻的真实性，甚至如何用 AI 工具来帮助学习，但不依赖它。随着 AI 技术的普及，特别是 ChatGPT 这些智能工具的出现，现在已经有越来越多的学生开始依赖 AI 来帮他们完成作业、搜索信息，甚至社交互动。当然，这也带来了很多新的问题，比如AI 生成的信息是否可信，学生要如何学会甄别真假信息，还有就是长期的依赖 AI 会不会影响小朋友们的思考能力，社交媒体上的 AI 算法又会如何影响我们的信息获取。那美国的教育界呢，已经开始意识到AI 工具虽然很强大，但如果不懂得如何正确的使用，很可能会影响到学生的独立思考能力。因此数字公民素养课程呢，也正在增强关于 AI 伦理的内容，比如他们在当中会涉及到如何识别 AI 生成的信息，避免传播虚假内容，还有如何在学术和工作中去合理的使用 AI 而不是抄袭或滥用，还有如何理解 AI 的推荐算法，避免掉入信息茧房。非常有幸的是呢，本期节目我也是采访到了 Common Sense Media 的教育外联与公众参与副总裁 Merv Lapas 先生，为大家带来第一手的关于这项课程的权威资讯和深入解析。他也是我旧金山大学的校友，他将与我们分享 Common Sense Media 是如何在全美及全球推广数字公民素养和 AI 素养教育课程的。他也会谈到当前教师和学校在引入这些课程时所面临的实际的挑战，同时呢，也会介绍他们是如何通过这些课程资源帮助教师将科技伦理、隐私保护、 AI 认知等议题带入课堂。无论你是教育工作者、家长，还是对此类相关话题感兴趣的听众，相信我和 Merv 先生的对话可以给你带来一些关于未来教育趋势的重要启发。这次采访呢是全英文的对话，如果你需要参照中文翻译，也可以在我们的节目介绍里找到我们简报平台上关于这期内容的链接，或者呢就直接登录我们的简报平台 www.educationminority.com。 在简报平台上，你可以快速的找到本期的双语内容翻译，这样呢可以帮助你更好的理解全篇的内容。好了，下面就让我们一起来听我与 Merv 先生的对话内容。
Hi, Merv. Thank you for being here today.
Very excited to be here with you today, Lena.
Yeah, so I'm here to ask you some questions about the digital citizenship curriculum conducted by the Common Sense Media. So I have noticed that the digital citizenship was launched in 2010. So how did you guys start this initiative, and how did this curriculum evolve from an idea to the latest version today?
Sure. So Common Sense Media as an organization, we initially started as an organization just reviewing and evaluating media and technology for kids and families, and so primarily parents. As we did this work, we quickly heard that schools wanted to be able to provide resources directly to their parents around how to navigate media. And back then, it was just music, maybe video games that were starting to get a little more violent. And then also just new TV shows. So we created content initially for schools to be able to get to families around the impacts of media and types of technology that's kind of emerging. And in that work, saw that there was a huge need coming straight from schools where they were appreciative of being able to discuss and share these things with families, but they recognized just the importance of how do we get our kids to start thinking about these things right now, as they're interacting with technology and as technology continues to really kind of innovate and grow. And so in that time frame is when we started developing then this curriculum alongside with some partners from the Harvard School of Education, the Good Play Project at the time, and now continue to work with them in our current iterations of the curriculum through the different sides of the organization that still focus on this research. As we did this work, back then we had primarily we started kind of in middle school first, just to kind of get a sense of ensuring that we were meeting the need and meeting the pedagogical needs of the classroom. And it was a handful of us, three of us, I think, on the ground that were just kind of testing this out in schools and really getting a sense of, are you able to connect with that as an educator? Is it turnkey enough so that you don't have to learn anything new, but really take it into the classroom and have really thoughtful, rich discussion? So it really started on the ground, going teacher by teacher and really trying to identify who the right educator is that can bring these conversations into the classroom or at least into the educational space.
That is very inspiring. You guys had the insights about the needs from the parent community and also the education community. So I'm wondering, what challenges have you faced in promoting and implementing this curriculum in schools nationwide?
We have about almost 1.4 million educators that is registered to use our resources on our site. And we're over 90,000 schools in the country that are using our resources already in their classrooms. So we have a pretty large distribution, an additional 90,000 schools that are around the world that are also using our content. But it's not that every single educator is using it in the schools. There are specific educators that are running the curriculum or addressing the curriculum. And we have a goal for having these types of concepts and ideas being addressed in every classroom. But we recognize some of the big challenges. Some of the challenges being, one, just where do you find the time, right? We've got, the reality is educators are already pressed for time. They are focused on their subject matter expertise. And so the big question often is, who's going to teach this? So my subject matter expertise is around history, social studies, math, or English. Why would I talk about digital citizenship, or where do I bring in these conversations in an effective way? So that's one. The second one really kind of being, how does this align to just kind of the needs of our school and our classroom? So I think we met the need for high quality and approachable. It's free and it's research backed and it's incredibly high quality content. So that's great. So anyone can use it, but really is, where do I find the time? Who's going to teach it? And how does this align to our priorities in the school? And if you don't have those things lined up, oftentimes it can start to feel like one more thing to do, right? And for educators, they already have so much to do. So something that is truly a supplemental curriculum or supplemental set of lessons needs to become more of a cultural response to the needs of students so that it's not just one teacher or one time addressing the issue, but really building into the way that we instruct and leverage technology and the decision making that kids are making and using technology in their lives.
So I'm a parent. When I see this wonderful curriculum, and I was wondering when this will be adopted or incorporated into my children's school, because I would like to have my children to learn about it or just maybe talk about it in school's life. So How do you guys address or do something reacting to these challenges? Like, do you guys actually have somebody assist or help those teachers or the schools figuring out how we can best serve or find a way to incorporate into your school schedules or agendas? You know, how can you make sure this will be spread out as much as possible that every school would actually adopt it eventually?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges, right? Is we are a nonprofit organization. My team is only so large. I only have six individuals across the country on the ground.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. But I'd say what we've done is look at it in a systematic approach. So we've done a really great job really empowering our educators to, one, we've heard how much they love it. We've learned so much about how they've implemented it. So how do we elevate those use cases through our social atmosphere, through conferences? How do we make sure we bring their stories to real educators in the spaces that they're already convening, using those professional learning communities as ways of elevating good best practices? But beyond just getting the kind of the bottom-up approach of getting educators to learn from each other and kind of share that information up, we recognize that there's a huge need of being able to work with administration and administrators and state policymakers to align our resources to outcomes and goals that are already being lined out for their schools. And so there are a number of policies that have to do with compliance, like E-rate compliance, which is connectivity and funding for connectivity in these schools. There is already a number of policies around cyberbullying, online safety, privacy. And with these policies in place, there is intention around how do we empower our kids to actually think about how they're using and talking about these issues. And so that's where our curriculum can come in and play a role. Now, we have to actively find opportunities to capture these best practices where my team is on the ground, take all of those insights, and then create resources to then put on our website to make available for any educator, any school district, or any school to replicate that experience, but make it their own, right?
Yes.
So with that, we've added a number of things. So yes, we've got this great curriculum, but in addition to the curriculum, we've got a number of asynchronous professional developments that are available on our site for free for any educator that'll, one, at its very minimum, get them to understand what digital citizenship means for them, how they use it, the impacts of their use case, and how might that implicate the classroom or their school community. So role modeling through practice, right? And then we've got additional trainings that build them up to understand how to teach the actual lessons, how to bring it into the classroom, how to become a recognized educator who addresses digital citizenship as a way of being able to kind of increase their thought leadership in their own school communities. We've taken that next step now and also creating training on AI literacy and addressing this new wave of technology. How do you address it in the classroom, but how do you understand it yourself and use it for your own use case in your classroom if it's going to help you be more effective and build in the time that you need to do things that you want to do, like spending time with your students.
Yeah, that's interesting. You just mentioned the AI literacy. As we are speaking here, I actually just saw the founder and CEO of Common Sense Media mention on his LinkedIn page that today, March 28th, is the National AI Literacy Day.
Yeah.
Looks like you guys have been working on incorporating AI literacy and content into the evolving digital citizenship curriculum. So can you tell me a little bit more about this AI Literacy Day and, you know, what are you guys trying to achieve here?
Sure. I think it's really important to recognize that we know and we hear everywhere how much AI is coming into all the spaces, even in education. We also recognize, though, that using AI and the way that AI is currently built is not necessarily conducive for early learning needs. Kids need to be able to develop kind of the ability to see the long game, work hard to get through an essay and really understand how you can take information, distill it down and create something that's very specific to you. And using AI takes that away from them in many ways. There are effective ways that you might use it to measure other things, but understanding what you're trying to measure and teach is going to be incredibly important. So when we talk about AI literacy, it's not essentially how do we teach kids how to use AI? Mm-hmm. It's more how to understand that AI is around us. If it's in the tools that we're using, it's in the programs that we might be exposed to. And even though we're not using it to create specific things for us, it's important to understand how it's pulling information to make recommendations for things we end up using. It's about being in the space and understanding the essence of the AI that's being used around you, not necessarily going in there and using it yourself, especially in our younger ages. Mm-hmm. So that means understanding what is AI versus generative AI. What's the difference? How is it being fed? What are the opportunities that it brings? But what are the challenges that it brings? How much bias exists in this tool? What does it mean when they hallucinate? What is then the implication on that in terms of what's generated? And what is the essential need of having a human in the loop at all times? Meaning, understanding why I need to identify what I'm asking it to do, recognizing that when it gives me something, I need to take the time as a human to verify it, understand it, adapt it, and actually then make a decision on how I will use this and put it out then to represent myself and other humans. So it's really diving into how it works, why you might use it, but understanding the ethical, long-term ethical consequences of using it inappropriately versus leveraging it for opportunity and academic integrity.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned that so far, all the content and all the curriculums are free and it's on your site, right? So basically everybody can access to it. Because I was wondering, this topic is such a global subject because it can apply to everywhere around the world, not just America, right? So for other countries and all the children are facing the same challenge as we adapt into the new era of AI and new technology. So how do you see the future? We can actually also help to provide this or maybe connect with more schools or children or parents around the world. Is there going to be different language version of this curriculum and providing to different countries? And is there something on your plan?
Yeah, so it's a challenge. So I would say that even though we focus primarily here in the United States, we are an international organization. We have thousands of schools around the world that are already using our resources. They're all in English and then also in Spanish. We also have some aspects of our curriculum that have been translated and are available in other languages as well. Those have been kind of one-off opportunities that we had taken with different departments of education or ministries of education that were really invested in bringing our resources into their spaces. I mean, the hard part is it's really expensive to translate content into not just the language, but to the context of that community. You know, even in the work that we did at the UK, so we have our curriculum, it's fully been transcreated in the UK through a partnership we had with the Welsh government, where they provided the funding for us to get all of our content, not just translated, but transcreated through the context of actual perspectives that would help students actually understand the work, and then further then transcreated down into Welsh so that it would meet their particular needs over there. It takes a lot of time and it's very expensive to do it right. We aren't resources as a nonprofit organization and charity. We just don't have those types of resources to do it in all the languages. I think there's a lot of interesting opportunities to consider where we think of, oh, how can AI potentially be an engine to help us maybe make these things more accessible? And it can do that on the language side, potentially, but it still does not address the context of the stories or even the names and how they're being used. There's a lot to go down the road in order to kind of build that into a system. Mm-hmm. So it still does require humans in the loop to kind of assess the validation of that transcreated product. But that being said, we have worked with other departments in Japan and Australia and a number of other countries who have been wanting to bring our content into their spaces and are already using it in some shape or form. It is a copyrighted set of resources, but we do have aspects of the curriculum that are Creative Commons and open. It's intended for educators to take and adapt it to meet their needs in the classroom. So educators are doing that freely. The only time that there's an issue or a major issue is when you violate that term and essentially take our curriculum, translate it, and then try to sell it in your own country. Like that becomes a problem. If they're taking it and they're using it for the needs of their schools and their students and their families, our curriculum is there for them to be able to use it that way.
Okay. So the last question as a parent, because I know maybe so far there are still some schools out there haven't really incorporated this curriculum, or maybe they haven't started addressing these topics. If I want to talk about this at home with my children, I can use this as a resource. So how can you guide the parents who actually want to learn about this? Go through your website. Where should I start from? Because I kind of feel like as a parent, we are also navigating through this new landscape, right? So can you give us some tips or guidance?
Yeah, so I would say there's a few different spaces. Now, one of the great things about Common Sense is it's a very robust site of information. One of the challenges is that it is a very robust site. I'm trying to find the things you need. Sometimes can be a little challenging, especially as you're maybe navigating for the first time. So for a lot of parents who come to the site, they'll start off with our Common Sense Media site, which is our ratings and reviews for parents. That's a good place to get a sense of how we evaluate media and technology through the perspective of child developmental milestones. And then it's up to them to then make the kind of decisions they want around the type of tech they'll use. But it's not just evaluating kind of media like movies or YouTube channels. There's also a number of parent guides and tip sheets specific to how to navigate the conversation around their first cell phone. When is social media going to be appropriate for your child? How do I navigate the toddler tantrums that come when I remove a device from their hands? Those types of things are available right on our site already. Now, if a parent wants to go deeper into the way that we've taken our digital citizenship curriculum and bring them into their own learning space, whether it's homeschool or they just support a community of kids and want to just engage in a direct conversation, they can totally take our resources for the classroom and use it in the home. What I would recommend, however, is within each of those lessons, there's actually a parent side to each of those lessons that is about bringing that conversation into a home context, into a conversation between parent or caregiver with their child, and maybe explore those if they don't want to necessarily provide like a whole kind of homeschool experience and more so kind of a conversation about the topics, they can use that as well. So I would say search for the parent guide specifically, and that can help bring it into more of that parent or caregiver conversation with the children in their lives.
Okay. Thank you so much, Merv. Thank you for today. I'm very grateful for your organization's work. Since it's a small team, but you guys have been doing tremendous, amazing work to address this very important topic. Thank you for today.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
听完了我和 Merv 先生的对话，你是否也正在考虑把数字公民素质教育也引入到家中以及和孩子们的日常对话里来呢？如果你孩子所在的学校还没有引进系统的数字公民素质教育，那么你可以向学校发出倡议，帮助引进数字公民课程或相关的课堂讨论。当然你也可以去 Common Sense Media 的网站去浏览相关的内容，自己学习，并且在家里和自己的孩子去开展相关的话题讨论。作为家长啊，我们要做的是引导孩子理性的使用网络，而不光是一味的完全禁止他们。值得庆幸的是，现在已经有越来越多的国家开始关注数字公民教育，比如英国、加拿大、澳大利亚都在推进类似的课程。希望也可以通过我们家长自身的呼吁和助力，让更多的国家和地区可以积极地行动起来，在学校和家庭环境中一起去加强网络素质教育，为孩子创造一个更加安全的网络环境。关于未来，互联网不会消失， AI 也不会停止发展，关键在于我们如何去适应这个变化，让下一代成为更有思考力和更有责任心的数字公民。好了，如果你喜欢我们本期的节目，一定要记得在我们的各个公众平台上留下你的五星好评。当然，关于网络素质公民教育的任何相关的话题，也欢迎你给我留言或者是发邮件来给我。我的邮箱地址是 lina@educationminority.com。好了，感谢你今天的收听，我们下期节目再见喽，拜拜。